The first case on the en banc court's argument calendar is In re Jeffrey J. Swan, a Nevada Rule of Appellate Procedure 5 certified question or questions, case 64808. Mr. Green, are you ready to go?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is James Green. I represent Sierra Medical Services. This is a question, as the Chief Justice indicated, that has been certified to this Court by Judge Nakagawa in the bankruptcy case. The question certified by Judge Nakagawa really breaks into two components, and you only get to the second question if you answer the first question in favor of Sierra Medical Services. The first question is essentially, does the Uniform Commercial Code govern a transaction like this between a non-hospital medical services provider or its assignee and an injured party who assigns its interest in the proceeds of potential personal injury litigation to the provider or the assignee? And our position is, for the reasons stated in our brief and that I'll address in a moment, our position is that the Uniform Commercial Code does not cover that transaction. If the Court agrees with me on that, then we get to the second question, in which Judge Nakagawa inquires, how does a party in my client's position put itself in a position such that it is beyond the reach or ahead in priority, ahead of a judgment creditor who has an unsatisfied garnishment? And our position on that is essentially the law of assignments provides by taking an assignment and putting the obligor on notice, you've essentially satisfied that obligation. And in fact, I think the law is clear, you would defeat the potential judgment creditor with the unsatisfied execution. Let me turn first to Judge Nakagawa's first question, which is application of the Uniform Commercial Code to this transaction. And for two reasons, we believe that the Uniform Commercial Code does not apply to this transaction. The first is that in NRS 104-9109, sub 4, sub L, the statute indicates that Article 9 does not apply to, quote, an assignment of claim arising in tort, close quote. In our view, the only logical way to read that is to read the term tort as including not only the tort itself, but the potential recovery from the tort as well. In other words, the proceeds of the tort. And we say that because in the Akron decision, which we discuss at length in our briefs, this court held that a tort claim itself under public policy cannot be assigned. Only the proceeds can be assigned. And we considered that to be a well thought out decision based on public policy grounds that allow the injured party to receive medical help and assistance during the time that they're waiting for their claim to be resolved, but also leaves that party in control of the claim. And we point to, in support of that, we point to a number of cases, but most notably the Barclays decision, which is a district court decision out of the Virgin Islands. And while it is certainly, as the trustee indicates, not binding on this court, we do think it contains a thorough and comprehensive discovery of this essentially unsettled area of law. And the conclusion that the Barclays court reaches is that including the proceeds of the tort in the concept of this exclusion, in section 9109-4L, is logical and is the most sound reading of the statute. And it bases that not only on statutory analysis issues, but on public policy issues. And the reason is that this type of tort claim typically is not used as a type of collateral in a commercial transaction. And that is why I believe it is excluded from the Uniform Commercial Code. Now, the trustee says, excuse me, if you're going to make that distinction, you can't make that distinction because ACRM makes a distinction between the tort claim itself and the proceeds of the tort claim. But I would advocate that this apparent inconsistency isn't an inconsistency at all, because ACRM was not a statutory interpretation case. ACRM was looking at an assignment that had occurred and looking at the issue of whether an assignment of the proceeds of tort litigation as a public policy matter makes good sense, and it concludes that it does. Now, when we're looking at the Uniform Commercial Code, Section 91094L, we're looking at statutory interpretation, and we're looking at different policy considerations. In addition, we're looking at sort of the logical reading of the statute. The policy considerations are, as I already indicated, that this type of claim is not normally used as collateral in a commercial transaction, and so it makes sense to exclude it. In addition, because under ACRM, tort claims themselves are already not assignable in Nevada as a matter of public policy, it essentially makes this statute moot. The claims aren't assignable to begin with, so why exclude assignments of tort claims from the coverage of the Uniform Commercial Code? May I, Your Honor? Now, the other ground that we have, that we raise for concluding that the Uniform Commercial Code does not cover this transaction is the fact that assignments are simply not included in the areas of coverage that the Uniform Commercial provides, and that is in section...
Counselor, is your second question leading this court or asking this court for an advisory opinion? It's not your second question, but the judge's question.
I don't consider an advisory opinion because we have a real controversy here. I think what Judge Nakagawa is asking you for is guidance as to what Nevada law is. He's got to make this decision.
My concern has to do with the language of the contract itself.
Okay.
Where in the contract is there an assignment? It looks to me like it says the patient grants SMS a lien pursuant to Nevada law. And I don't know of any Nevada law where there is a lien.
I think you're right, Your Honor. I mean, I think that's a reference to Nevada common law. There is not a statutory provision that provides for liens in this kind of situation.
What case provides for a common law lien of this kind?
We did not find a case that provides for a common law lien.
So when you say it's a common law lien in Nevada, this would be an issue of first impression?
Well, Your Honor, that gets to an... Let me address it this way.
Okay.
Our position on the second point, and I'm glad to move on to that, but our position on the second point is it's not really a lien at all. Medical lien is basically a term of art used in this industry. But what this document really does, if you look at the substance of it, is it's an assignment. And that's right at the beginning of the contract. It says, payment to provider. I, Maureen Swan, hereby authorize and direct you, the personal injury lawyer, to pay directly to LVQ, that's the medical services provider, or its assignee. Okay, so what's really happening here, and I understand this is confusing. It was confusing to me for a while, but I think I've kind of sorted it out at this point. But what's really happening here is there's this term, medical lien. It's really not a lien at all. Okay, it's an assignment of the right to receive a certain portion of the proceeds of this tort claim. And the distinction that I would make is that if this is a lien, then you have to foreclose it. For instance, if you have a security interest in this provider's accounts receivable and there's a default, you have to foreclose on the collateral and then start trying to monetize it. This is not like that at all. This is where the medical provider or its assignee simply waits until there's a settlement, and hopefully there will be a settlement that will pay this. There's no foreclosure process. There's no due date. There's not even an obligation to prosecute the litigation should the injured party choose not to do so.
But the referring judge did not make an interpretation of the contract one way or the other as to whether this is an assignment, a common law lien, a lien. None of those determinations were made by the referring bankruptcy judge. So why should we answer the second question?
Well,
what is the basis for our doing so?
Well, I think what it does is it gives Judge Nanagawa guidance. For example, the position that we urge on the court on the second question, and by the way, I would like to reserve about 2 minutes, so mm-hmm. I'll keep an eye on the chart. But the position we urge on the court is to follow the law of assignments, and I think this gets back to the distinction between the lien and an assignment. I think the law on assignments is pretty clear. ACRIM makes very clear that once the proceeds of personal injury litigation are assigned, they no longer belong to that party. That party doesn't have the ability to go back to the personal injury lawyer and say, I changed my mind, pay that money to me. ACRIM makes very clear that that party is subject to...
Even assuming that argument, do you acknowledge a weakness in your contract where it doesn't specifically assign anything?
Well, I think it does.
It designates the lawyer or tells the lawyer to pay out a certain amount, but it doesn't seem to assign anything.
Well, I think it does assign a portion of the proceeds, and then it also uses the medical lien terminology. So I think there is some ambiguity there. And I would love to get together with my client and rewrite this so that it's a little more clear that it's an assignment. but I think that's why what I mentioned before.
This is my point about yes. whether this is something that the referring judge should address before this court would consider that second question in an NRAP 5 context. That's my question.
Well,
you're in effect asking us to determine as a matter of law that your contract constitutes an assignment under your argument in this case.
I don't think we are asking you to do that, Your Honor.
Isn't that what your argument says?
Our position is that's what it is an assignment. But I also understand that this court is bound by the underlying facts, and I guess that's a fact not included there. So we could go back and have an evidentiary hearing and come back here at that point. Yes. But I think this court is well positioned, and I think what Judge Nakagawa had in mind was give me some guidance. If the UCC governs this transaction, then we agree we have file a financing statement. If the UCC does not govern this transaction, I think what Judge Nakagawa is asking you is, what is the law in Nevada? And I think it's a close question whether that's an advisory opinion or not, Your Honor. I think on the record that you have and the briefing that you have, the court is in a position to be able to make a ruling as a matter of law as to what would my client have to do. But I understand your concern, Your Honor.
And you want to reserve the rest of your time, Mr. Dean? Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your argument.
Thank you.
Mr. Schwarzer, how are you today?
Actually, very good, thank you.
Good.
Appreciate that. My first point is I think you have to go back and when you ask about statutory construction, is look at the statute. Here, the UCC provides that, in general, all transactions where there is a security interest requires the filing of a financing statement, and then it gives a list of exceptions. And prior to 2001, the exception was an assignment of a claim arising in tort, period. But after 2001, the Nevada legislature adopted an amendment that was proposed by the Uniform Code Commission. And it said the exception is an assignment of a claim arising in tort other than commercial tort claims, but NRS 104-9315 and 104-9322 apply with respect to proceeds and priorities in proceeds. So you have this general statute saying everything's covered, then you have an exception, and then you have an exception in of the exception. And that is what we're dealing with today in this case. So the language is not just an assignment of a claim arising in tort is accepted, but you have to read the whole statute. And the whole statute then refers to priorities with respect to proceeds and priorities in proceeds. That, and then the legislature, when it adopted this, had the report of the Uniform Commercial Code, their comment. And comment number 15 is tort claims. Subsection B12 narrows somewhat the broad exclusion of transfers of tort claims under former Section 9-104K. Then it goes on. Note that once a claim arising in tort has been settled and reduced to a contractual obligation to pay, the right to payment becomes a payment intangible and ceases to be a claim arising in tort. That's what the legislature had in front of it when it adopted the amendment in 2001. Assuming that the legislature had that in front of them, and somebody read it and doesn't stamp it, which I think we have to do, the legislative history here makes it clear that a settlement of a PI case becomes a payment intangible once it's sold. And once it's a payment intangible, there's no question that it's covered by the Uniform Commercial Code. And why is this 2001 amendment important? Well, because if you look at the cases cited by Sierra Medical, you'll see that the cases that are in favor of its position are all pre-2001 cases. Barclays business credit is from the Virgin Islands in 1996. I didn't get a chance to reply to the cases in the reply brief, but if you look at them, Owens versus CNA is a New Jersey 2000 case. Insurance Company of North America versus Della is a Connecticut 1998 case. Bluxom is a California appellate case from 1988. Satenko is a California case from 1987. Israel Discount Bank is the Yingli Cargo case is from 1976. So all those cases were based upon the old pre-2001 statute, not the new revised statute.
Your point is that if a clinic provides care to a patient and that patient is suing on the claim underlying the injury that led to the care, that a person who gets a judgment against that patient then moves ahead of the healthcare provider in terms of that patient's eventual recovery. Is that right?
If the healthcare provider has not perfected his security interest.
So you don't make any distinction between the fact that it's a healthcare provider and then the healthcare provider assigned this claim. Analytically, there's no basis to distinguish between the two, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so you're saying that every healthcare provider in Nevada, under your view of the UCC, to protect him or herself against the eventuality of the patient being subjected to a judgment of any stripe, must file a UCC-1 in order to be paid out of the proceeds of the patient's tort suit?
To protect themselves. In other words, it's a financial decision. Do I want to spend the $30 on the Secretary of State e-filing fee?
Right. And you're saying if the provider doesn't, it's at their peril.
I'm saying there's no exception.
What about an insurance company and a civil claim? Do they have to also file?
Subrogation claims are treated differently under Nevada law.
And but not under the UCC. Where is that expressed as an exclusion under your reading of this provision?
Well, because my understanding, and I'm not an expert in insurance law, but my understanding that subrogation claims are not treated as security interests, and therefore they don't are not under the uniform commercial
code. But that's a common law, not a statutory.
Yes, subrogation
was created
as a contractual subrogation. Remember, there's a contract, an insurance contract that says if we pay you for damages, you're subrogated for us to repay it. Same thing.
So for why isn't this the model of subrogation? That's where I'm trying to take you.
Well, it could be. I imagine that someone could write a contract like that, but in this case, again, we have to look at what we have in front of us, which is a medical lien contract.
Right.
It's a contract that says medical lien contract. And what does it do?
The only assignment in it is the provider to the
right
to the funding entity, whatever its name is.
Correct. What I'm basically saying, and it's, I sort of jokingly want to put it for people who understand that we're in Passover, is why is this lien different from all other liens? And the answer is it isn't. It's a lien that's covered by the Uniform Commercial Code and there's certain rules for perfection. Somebody who gets a deed of trust from a friend because he loaned him money but doesn't bother to record it has the same problem. I didn't record it. I fall behind garnishing creditors or judgment creditors. If I'm a lender who loans money on automobiles and I take the title, but the debtor has the car, and I don't take the title to the DMV to record it and have my lien put on the title, I fall behind a judgment creditor who garnishes or executes on the car because I haven't perfected my lien as required by Nevada law. It doesn't matter whether it's a DMV lien, because that has a separate group of rules, or a UCC lien.
Would your analysis then require revision of the ethics rules that say that a lawyer who presses a tort claim and is aware of a medical lien in whatever sense you want to use it, that money belongs to the medical care provider who should be paid out of the proceeds and that ethically the lawyer should pay it in that setting? There's a lot of law on that.
I think your
point is if it's not perfected, how would that reshape that law?
Well, because at that point, the attorney doesn't have a right to do any disbursements if there's a bankruptcy case or if there's an execution. He no longer has the funds. If in bankruptcy, the trustee does the distribution. The attorney is cut out of the distribution system.
Yeah, you paid the attorney in this case, but only whatever
is in the contract. Pursuant to a contract that was entered between the trustee and the attorney that was approved by the bankruptcy court.
But did the trustee default on his or her obligations to this creditor in that process?
Well, this creditor had a claim that was, we're perfectly willing, the trustee is willing to pay the claim, it's the same as all other unsecured creditors.
Sure, but it's swamped. I mean, it's dimes on a dollar.
Case-by-case basis. In this case, it may be 50 cents on the dollar, it may be 10
right.
cents on the dollar. On the other hand, the problem you have is statutorily, there's just no exception that says, I'm going to treat medical liens, doctor's liens, different from a retail store, any other type of lien. That's up to the legislature to make the change as far as...
And the only one is the hospital lien. So.
The hospital lien is an exception. And the attorney lien might be an exception because attorneys can get it perfect their lien by sending notice to the other side. But that's what NRS 18.015 provides for perfection of an attorney's lien. So attorneys can perfect their lien one way. Hospitals can perfect their lien by recording with the county recorder. But every other person, whether it's a doctor, a chiropractor, a plumber, well, not a plumber, because he works in the house that has a mechanics lien issue, but anybody else who provides services that are personal to the debtor, if they want to have a perfected lien, they have to record that UCC-1, which is a $30 fee recorded with the Secretary of State.
Is there any legislative history that clarifies this issue in Nevada?
Well, I think the legislative history is the Uniform Commercial Code report that the legislature had when it adopted
Well, they have a lot of things, but they make any reference to a particular part of that.
No, I did not find that the legislature, I did not find any legislative history, Your Honor. I found that the Uniform Law Commission report was made part of the, if you go online, you look, you'll find that it refers to that report and it refers to that specific section. One would assume that if the report was available to the legislature, I wouldn't do that. I understand, and I'm not going to say whether they read it or not either. I'm not making that representation. They had it available to them, and that's the report.
Do we have any issues as to this being intangible?
No, because intangibles are covered by the Uniform Security Interest in a payment intangible is clearly covered by the Uniform Commercial Code. It's like any other thing. If I accounts receivable is the most typical payment intangible. If I have a lien on your accounts receivable, I have to file a financing statement with the Secretary of State to perfect my security interest. That's why we think this would be applicable to medical doctors, because the legislature did not make an exception. One more case I wanted to cite to you that I think is helpful, and that's a case, it's a Ninth Circuit case that came out in 2002 called In Re Pacific West Communications. It's at 301 F. 2nd, 1150. That case also involved the pre-2001 statute, but the Ninth Circuit said in analyzing that, said, but we begin by recognizing that under the new statute, we don't have this issue because effective July 1st, 2001, California now allows a security interest to be attached to the proceeds of a tort claim.
Is the California law in harmony with Nevada, or is it slightly different?
Identical. And that's part of the quote of the that follows where they cite the statute, which is California Commercial Code 9109, and it then quotes that the exact same words of the exception that's in the Nevada statute. So California and Nevada adopted the exact same modification in 2001. And the Ninth Circuit is able to discern there's no question under the revised statute. And maybe that's why there's not a lot of case law to help us, because if you look at this revised statute and you look at the Uniform Commission report, somebody should not have a tough question about this. Obviously, it's tougher than I think. The other point I wanted to make is I think you also have to look at the fact that this only involves a medical lien, not an assignment. The contract is strictly a medical lien contract, and trying to twist and turn it to make it into an assignment is twisting the language. And we all know that your judge's job in interpreting a contract is to look at the words, the plain words that are there. And if SMS said, I want a medical lien, and they ask the patient, please grant me a lien, and that's the exact words in the contract, they can't say, oh, I really meant an assignment.
Mr. Schwarzer, could you comment on comment 15 under 9109, which was in 2000 when this was enacted? The last sentence says, this article, not referring to subsection D12, narrows somewhat the broad exclusion of transfers of tort claims under former 9104K. Mm-hmm. This article now applies to assignments of commercial tort claims, as well as security interests in tort claims that constitute proceeds of other collateral, e.g., a right of payment to payment, for negligent destruction of a debtor's inventory. It seems as though the point of the assignment of proceeds was directed at other collateral, not the subject matter of an assigned tort.
The answer is yes, Your Honor. I think the main purpose of the statute was to cover the situation where someone had a piece of property that was covered by a security interest, and that property was destroyed by some third person's tortious activity, and the proceeds from that were a tort claim.
It seems like
that was the main purpose of the statute.
But it seems like you're carrying that beyond what the drafter's comment suggested it was intended to cover, the assignment of proceeds provision. And I want to carry you back to another question. In Nevada, we say you can't assign a tort claim. So obviously, the provisions in the UCC that prohibit that wouldn't even have any application because we prohibit the assignment of the tort claim itself. So in effect, if we read into the proceeds assignment provisions that you're suggesting, it really renders the earlier portion of the UCC exemption dealing with assignment of tort claims to be irrelevant. We don't allow that in any event.
And you're right.
So doesn't that, the assignment of tort claims, doesn't that interpretation cause an interpretation that doesn't make any sense? The first exemption wouldn't even have any application then. What would be the example of an assigned tort claim given your interpretation of proceeds that would even apply?
Well, the difference, first of all, there's a difference between an assignment and a security interest.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't assign a tort claim because the person who's bringing the claim can't be the assignee. It has to be the person who was personally injured.
Well,
whether it's by malpractice, whether it's by a car accident, whether it's by legal malpractice. But as you said in Akram, you can assign the proceeds. And what we have here is a medical lien that gives a security interest in a portion of the proceeds. So that's what we're dealing with here. And that is allowed by Nevada law because you have clearly said that you can assign the proceeds of a personal injury tort claim. Otherwise, Mr. Akram wouldn't have had to come out of pocket to pay those claims.
Well, I think SMS and yourself are equating Akram to be the granting of a security interest in proceeds as opposed to an assignment of proceeds.
Well, it's hard to say, you know, to be, you know, obviously, this
there is a difference.
This court had a different perspective when it's dealing with when it's only between the attorney and the creditor, mm-hmm. as compared to the claim, the proceeds of the claim, and third-party creditors who have rights that are completely different than the attorney. The attorney, Mr. Akram, breached his contract. Mm-hmm. I mean, you didn't even have to look at everything else. He said, you had a contract. You said you were going to pay me, and you didn't. That's a breach of contract claim, not a security law claim, not a security interest issue. Here, the question is, can you make an exception, find an exception in the UCC for?
I'm just concerned that the position you advocate, an exception to the exception, goes beyond what the comment 15 suggested it was intended to accomplish.
And the answer is that the only case I could find on point is the Ninth Circuit's case, which is clearly not binding on this court, that said, clearly,
yeah,
that's what it means.
And maybe it was clear to those judges, but it isn't clear.
And that wasn't important to their decision because they were interpreting the prior 2000.
Yeah, I just wondered if their clearly language was dicta.
Oh yes, I'm not going to argue with anything else. But
okay, thank you very much for your argument. Excellent argument today, Mr. Schwartzer. You've got a minute and a half, Mr. Green. What would you like to say?
Your Honor, I'd just like to touch on Justice Pickering's points. You raised a good point. The question, I think, is before the court is, and where Judge Nakagawa is asking for help, is under Nevada law, if I have an assignment of personal injury proceeds and there's a judgment creditor who comes along and tries to attach those and file something with the court where the action is pending or whatever you need to do to try to execute on that, who would take priority? And I think under Akram, it is clearly the assignee, the prior assignee. That's consistent with the citation we made to the restatement of the law of contracts. It is consistent with the rationale and the holding of ACRM that says those assets no longer belong to that debtor.
Would you address your colleague or your opponent's argument that the proceeds language covers this circumstance, the proceeds exception?
Yes, the proceeds exception may bring those in, but the point I would make, and maybe it's an issue for the bankruptcy court, is that the proceeds don't exist in many cases until after the bankruptcy is filed. We're looking at what is the status of the circumstance on the date the bankruptcy petition is filed, because that's when the trustee gets his or her creditor power. And so I think if you have the proceeds come up later, that the real issue is a timing issue, and what is the status at the time the case is filed.
Do my colleagues have any further questions for Mr. Green?
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thank you very much for your arguments, counsel. Well done.
Thank you.
The matter will stand submitted.